All right, so we're holding on Nun Vov Omid Beis, about 15 lines from the bottom line of Kamash Malan. Nun Vov Omid Beis. London's Kamash Malan, about 12, 15 lines from the bottom end. All right, so we talked about in the Mishnah, you have a case where there are brothers and partners. According to Rashi, the situation is that you have brothers who divided up their father's estate and then decided to take their individual shares and rejoin as a partnership. According to the Rambam, we're talking about two different cases, one where they're brothers with the undivided estate and the other one where they're partners. Okay. So we said that you have a din regarding master shekel, that you have in general when a person gives many times when a person gives a master shekel or when a person gives one coin of master shekel for one whole seller to cover two people's master shekel, then himself and somebody else, let's say, then he has to pay an extra amount called a kolbein. We said, on the other hand, when the estate is undivided, then we said there would be potter from that, because then it's as if the father is still alive and giving master shekel on their behalf. The flip side of that with Maisa Behema is individuals are chayiv in Maisa Behema, partners are not. Therefore, if they have a partnership, then they're potter from Maisa Behema. If they're not doing it as a partnership, but they still have the original undivided estate, then they're chayiv in Maisa Behema. Not the field, actually, we're talking about animals over here. So we're talking about if you have individual ownership of animals, then you have to give Maisa Behema to them. But if you have people own animals jointly, then we're saying you don't have to. Then you don't have to give Maisa Behema. Because we said yesterday, the Pasuk mentioned the concept of Maisa Behema in the singular, Yilacha. The Rambam, by the way, has a somewhat different shita on that. His shita is that when it comes to a partnership, only the first generation animals that they bought with the assets of the partner, that they bought with their individual assets and then joined together in a partnership, those would be potter. He learns that the animals that are born in future generations that belong to the partnership would be chayim. How exactly that fits with the Gemara over here is a subject that the Nosei Kelim on the Rambam discuss a lot. Okay. Anyway. Amr of Anan. So Rav Anan says in this connection, Lo Shanu, this that we learned in the Mishnah, that if they divided up the estate and then they rejoined together in a partnership, that would only apply Elashakoku Gdoyim Kineged Tioshim or Tioshim Kineged Gdoyim. Only if they divided up the animals by figuring out the value. So they divided up one, for example, one person gets a certain number of young goats and the other one gets a certain, and a certain number, and the other one gets a corresponding number of old goats and vice versa. So they figure out the value of each animal and divide it up like that. Once we do like that, then you can't say now we have to consider when they're inheriting from their father, should we consider that they are essentially it basically comes down to a matter of grace. You have a concept in halacha called brera, which is when you have something was chosen afterwards, when you have something was set aside, for example, for truma or whatever, do we consider it that retroactively this is what it was all along? That would be called yesh brera. Or we would say ein brera, that originally it wasn't necessarily that it had to come out this way, and so now, from now on, then we're saying that this is truma, for example, or this belongs to this person, or that belongs to that person, but not before that. Now, when we have brothers are inheriting from their father, everything that the father owns gets split up evenly among the brothers, except, okay, if one of them is a Bukhari, he gets a double portion, but fine. There's no particular class of assets where you would say that one boy has a right to more of them than the other. If he has a certain number of young goats and a certain amount and a certain number of old goats, each of them is entitled, let's say there's two of them, each of them is entitled to half of the young goats and half of the old goats. So if they decide instead, we don't want to do that, we're not interested in splitting exactly down the line like that, we'd rather, one of them says, I'd rather have more old goats. So, okay, we figure out the value of each one. The other one says, I'd rather have more young goats. And therefore, what we do is we figure out, okay, how much are all the young goats worth in aggregate? How much are all the old goats worth in aggregate? And we divide it up that way. If we do that, then it's not a question of brera. Then you can't say that now, when they divided it, we can say that retroactively this was meant to be his portion as soon as the father died, because it obviously wasn't. If we had followed the way it would have been when the father died, each of them would have been entitled to half of each type of animals. So that's when we can say, when they divided it up, and then later on they rejoined in a partnership, then we can say it's considered a partnership, and therefore the animals are part of a mitzvah. But if each one is taking a proportionate amount of each type of animal, so each one is, so the one is taking a certain number of young goats, the other one is taking a certain number of young goats. Same thing with the old goats. Then we can say that the ones that he ended up with, we can say yesh brera. It turns out that the part that each one got is considered to be, he was the heir for it. He was the heir of it. It's considered as though it was his as soon as the father died. Therefore, if they rejoin in a partnership, it doesn't make a partnership. What it makes is that in effect they're bringing things back to the way it was when it was an undivided estate. Therefore, that's when Rav Onan says, then we would not have the din of the Mishnah that they are potter from mice of the hema on the grounds that the animals that they own are considered to belong to a partnership. Rather, we would say that the animals that they have now are considered as though to begin with they were in the undivided estate all this time, and therefore it's still considered they still belong as if they still belong to their father, therefore they're chayiv and mice of the hema. So that's the thing. So what we say, as soon as the father dies, it's going to be, let's say, so you have, let's say, there's 10 young goats and 10 old goats. Each one of them immediately, as soon as the father dies, is entitled to 5 young goats and 5, and then 5 old goats. So if they ended up dividing, what I'm going to say is if they ended up dividing it that way, each one gets 5 young goats and 5 old goats, then it means, okay, so when they do that, okay, so they're dividing it up, each one gets his number of goats, but later on, if they decide to rejoin a partnership, it's not making a new entity, it's not making a new partnership that didn't exist before, all they're doing is bringing things back to the way things were when the estate was undivided, while their father was alive. And just like when their father was alive, all of these animals would have been chayiv and mice of hema, so it is now also, well, I mean, just the newborn ones, if they're of the next year, that is, would have been chayiv and mice of hema, so it is now. Rav Nachman says, no, afilu choku gdoyim k'neged gdoyim, or tiyoshim k'neged tiyoshim, no, even if they divide up an equal number of young goats to each one, an equal number of old goats to each one, we do not say that necessarily that is what was originally supposed to be his portion from the beginning. In other words, we say, ein breva. Yes, right now you ended up with 5 goats, and it was 5 young goats and 5 old goats. But who says that those would have been the 5 young goats and those particular young goats and those particular old goats that you were actually the owner of as of when the father died? Maybe if we say ein brera, it means, in other words, that yes, now, okay, you end up with a certain number of animals, but conceivably we can consider it as if you actually originally were supposed to have been the owner of a different animal, and you traded with your brother and decided, okay, he'll get that animal and you'll get this one instead. So even though we're talking about the same kind of animals on both sides, Rav Nachman takes the view that it's considered each animal that you got is considered that you traded with your brother for an equivalent animal of that type and ended up with this one. And therefore, it's a trade. So therefore, it's considered. So even when you partner back together, you have a new partnership. You don't have the original estate. Okay. Similarly, a similar machlokas between two other amiroyim, following the same principle of yesh brera or ein brera. But Rabbi Lazar puts it differently. Loy shonu ela shachoku test kineged yud v'yud kineged test. This that we're talking about in the Mishnah again, that if they divided the estate and then rejoined as partners, that we're saying they're potter from mice of behema on the grounds of the partnership. That would only be if they divided, for example, 9 of one type of animal corresponding to 10 of a different type. So you had 9 more expensive animals of a certain type, you had 10 less expensive animals, and they agreed that they're fine, you know, the 9 animals in aggregate are worth $90, let's say, $10 an animal. The next 10 are also worth $90 in aggregate, because they're cheaper animals, they're worth only $9 a piece. So we're going to divide them. I'll get 9 of the better ones, you'll get 10 of the lesser ones. So then when they do that, then again, we can say it's not a matter of brera, because there's no reason to say that would have been the way that they were entitled as soon as the father died. As soon as the father died, they were each entitled to an equal percentage of the cheaper animals and the more expensive animals. Avol choku test kineged test, the yud kineged yud. But if they divided 9 against 9 and 10 against 10, meaning, in other words, they did not figure out the values, they just split the animals without looking into the actual values of them. Then again, we can say, yes, we can consider the animals that they have now are the animals that were actually considered retroactively their portion as of when the father died. And if we say that, then we say that, again, when they partner together again, then it's not a, then it's not considered making a new entity, a new partnership. It's re-putting the estate back to the way it was before. Therefore, my behemoth will apply. So he holds like Rav Omen. Rav Yechanan Omer. Rav Yechanan says no, like Rav Nachman. Even if they divided 9 against 9 or 10 against 10, we do not say that that necessarily was supposed to be his original portion. We say, right now you ended up picking that you get 10 animals, but it doesn't mean that that was the original 10 animals that were originally expected to be yours when the father died. Therefore, it's still considered to be a new partnership rather than the old estate. By the way, this explanation that we've been saying all this time, this is how Rashi learns. When we say Loi Shonu, we're referring to the case of our Mishnah where they divided up the estate and then they joined back together. Rabbeinu Gershom learns, and Rashi also brings this in. In a Gemara in Tzmura where it discusses this point. Also, Rashi brings an explanation over there, which is. Again, which is what Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, that we're talking about just when they first inherited. We're not even talking about if they joined together as a partnership. When they first inherited, are we considering that it's as if they bought from each other, or are we considering it as if they actually have what was destined to be theirs in the first place, which therefore would affect the question. If we say that it's considered bought, that they traded with each other, it's possible, because what Kuach is possible. If we say that it's considered that they inherited what they were supposed to all along, then it was considered theirs all along, therefore it would be chayav in ma'aseh behemoth. That's how Rabbeinu Gershom comes in. Okay. So the Gemara says, v'azir Rav Yechanan l'taymeh. Now Rav Yechanan, when he says that in this case, we don't say that there's brera, we say even though you ended up with a certain number of animals, we still don't consider that those were necessarily the original ones that were supposed to be to begin with. In other words, Rav Yechanan in effect is saying that the brothers are considered as though they traded or purchased the animals from each other, and that's why he says they're possible from Ma'aseh Behemah. Rabbi Yechanan is going according to his own shita. The Amr of Asi Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Ha'achen Shecholchu, when brothers divide up the estate, says Rabbi Yechanan, L'kuchatein, it's considered that they bought from each other, because each one is trading a certain part of the property for a different one. U'machzirin zel ozeh b'yovel, and therefore they would have to return the property to each other in Yovel. Rashi, that we had this at the end of the previous parak. Rashi over there learns that it means that they start the division all over again. They put it all back in the common pool and then redivide among all the brothers. The Rambam learns they don't actually redo the division. They just redo who gets which portion. They decided already that it's going to be divided into X number of strips for X number of brothers. So all we do is now in Yovel we make a new goyel or whatever to decide who gets what strip. So Rav Yechanan holds that brothers, when they divide up the estate, are considered buyers, which amounts to the same thing as he's saying over here. That's considered they bought the animals from each other. So why does he need to say it twice? The Gemara says it's shrichi. We need Rav Yechanan to be telling us both giving. De'iashmin in Hafa, because if Rav Yechanan told us this concept only as regards Ma'aseh Behemah, you would say, Bahaka Amar Rav Yechanan, you would say, you know why over here Rav Yechanan tells us that you have this concept that's considered they bought from each other because, as we said yesterday, Dumya Debincha. It has to be animals that you give from Ma'aseh Behemah, that you count from Ma'aseh Behemah, have to be similar to your children, because we had a hekesh in the pasuk. Therefore, Ma Bincha B'Baruach, just like your child is very clearly yours, you don't have to get into an issue of Brera or not. He was born to your wife, he's your child, there's no retroactive considerations, is he your son or not. You would say, okay, the same thing, the animals you count from Ma'aseh Behemah have to be borrowed. But you would say maybe Rav Yechanan would hold differently when it comes to a field that you're inheriting, that a person is inheriting together with his brothers. You would argue, you would say only a sale, only sold land, does the Torah say goes back in Yovel. You would argue that if it was inherited or given as a gift, it doesn't go back in Yovel. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan needs to tell us his din that they are considered purchasers and they do have to exchange it in Yovel. The Iyashman and Soda, on the other hand, if Rabbi Yechanan told us this din only by a field, you would argue, okay, Lachumra, And the reason why he says it flies there by a field is because it brings about a chumrah. Maybe it's Rav Yechanan has a suffix, whether they're considered purchasers or not. So therefore, when it comes to a field, to be on the safe side, because after all, giving back the field in Yovel is a din d'oraisa, so therefore he's going to say, mitzvah suffix, go and return it in Yovel, just in case they're considered a buyer. But over here, when it comes to Maisa Behema, saying that they're considered that they bought it from each other results in a kula, results in saying that's possible for Maisa Behema. Inami lachatchila. Or you could argue there's another reason why to distinguish between a field and animals, because by a field, the point is the Torah wants you to bring things back to the way they were beforehand. The Torah wants you to rewind, when it comes to Yovel, you rewind whatever's been going on in the last 50 years and return the field to whoever had it at the beginning of the 50 years, whoever inherited it from their ancestors before. Avahocha. And in fact, the Rashba actually mentions in a different sugya, the Rashba learns that Rashi might hold that lahatchila means that maybe even we restore Eretz Yisrael to the state it was in the times of the office. The whole Eretz Yisrael was promised to Abraham, one person. So maybe in effect we consider Eretz Yisrael as though it belongs to one person again, and then we start redividing it among his heirs again. The Rashba himself says, I don't really like that. You still have the borders of the 12 Shvatim are pretty much fixed. But he says, okay, within each Shevet, it would be that way. In effect, what we're doing is we're rewinding to the way it was when they first divided up Eretz Yisrael among the 12 Shvatim. Each Shevet is given its portion of land in Eretz Yisrael. And now, come Yovel, that's exactly what we're doing. Again, we're making sure that each person in that Shevet now has a portion of land. Well, now how it would work now when Mashiach comes, that's, you know, Eretz Yisrael is going to be redivided in yet a different way among the Shvatim anyway. You actually have, if you look on a map, the boundaries, the territories of the Shvatim were somewhat unequal in size, and they had borders that went all over the place. Yechezkel actually described, towards the end of Sefer Yechezkel, he described how the Mosa Mashiach, Eretz Yisrael, is going to be split into very neat rows. You're going to have a row from east to west, another row from east to west, etc., seven of them north of Yerushalayim for seven of the Shvatim, five of them south of that for the other five Shvatim, a strip in the middle which includes Yerushalayim and the Beth Mikdash, and territory for Mashiach, etc. But each one is going to be a neat row next to the other one.
Yeah. When they first divided the land, there were only so many people that, like, there were not as many people as later on in the later years.
Right.
There were many, many, many more people, right?
Right.
So how would they redivide the land?
So the idea, that was the idea, yeah. I mean, over time, yeah, you would have smaller portions. Even so, I mean, you have a Gemara in Ksubas that tells us that even that Eretz Yisrael in those days was so fertile that even a very small portion of land could comfortably support a family.
So every single person, every single Jewish family had their own people.
So that was how it was supposed to be, that every single Jewish family, yeah, because, we should say, not strictly speaking every single Jewish family, strictly speaking, Geirim not, because they didn't have land to inherit from their parents, or Shevet Levi also, that's true, right? Shevet Levi just had the Aramik one. But all the other Shvatim, yeah, every person, every man who belongs to a Shevet, his father belonged to that Shevet also, and his father belonged to that Shevet also, going back to the original one of the 12 Shvatim. And yeah, the idea was, come Yovel, we redivide things so that everyone has a piece of land, right? So then you could argue, again, so going back to the Yechanan, so you could argue when it comes to fields, you could say that's the idea. Because the Torah wants you to rewind things and make things like the original division, therefore we're going to say that the brothers also, when they divide up an estate, are considered like they're purchasers, and therefore we have to have them redivide it or exchange portions or whatever in Yovel. But when it comes to Maisa Behema, there's no such thing. We're not rewinding anything. Aim a law. You would argue maybe not. Maybe in that case, Rabbi Yechanan would not consider that they bought from each other. Therefore, Rabbi Yechanan has to tell us his shita in both cases. That in both cases, even though one is a chumra and one is a kula, even though one you have a hekesh with bincha and the other one not, etc., nevertheless, the shita is the same in both. Brothers who divide up an estate, whether we're talking about the land, whether we're talking about the animals, are always considered they purchased it from each other. Therefore, so far as Maisa Behema, the result of that is that they will be potter, even if they rejoin the partnership. Or according to Rabbi Negev, should forget about rejoining a partnership, just the fact that they inherited it. And according to, and in the case of a field, that they do have to return their respective portions to each other in Yerba. Okay.
No
so according to Rabbi Yerba, no brera at all. The halacha, by the way, in general, the Rambam passes, you actually have a machlokes for showing him what the actual halacha is, as far as whether there's brera or not. The Rambam passes, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that in things that arise, so we say ein brera, and with things that are bonan, we say yesh brera. Okay. The Gemara says, okay, I have a contradiction to all of this. If you're telling me, according to the opinion that yesh breva, again, according to Rav Onan and according to Rav Elazar, that you have a case where yesh breva, and you have a case where ein breva. So we have a Mishnah that goes like this. Now the Torah tells, yesterday we talked about Esnan Zoyna, the Torah mentions, together with Esnan, it mentions another thing called Mechir Keled. If you exchange something for a dog, then that something is also to be brought as a carbon. Yeah. Again, similar to Esnan Zoyna, it's not if you later on traded that something for something else. But let's say you traded money for a dog, and then later on you took the money and bought another animal with it, the animal would be kosher for a carbon. But if you actually traded, let's say, a sheep for a dog, then the sheep would be also as a carbon. It's a concept called Esnan, right? Not Esnan, Mechir Keled. So we'll learn more about it in tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Okay. So the Mishnah says, "V'chein ashutkin shechofu." The Mishnah says that the same thing. If partners divided up, so they had a partnership, they had assets that belonged to them jointly, and now they're dividing them up. Echad notol asara. Suppose then that one of them takes 10 sheep, the echad notol tisha v'kelev. The other one takes 9 sheep and 1 dog. So then shekineged akelev asurin, all the sheep that are on the other side of the dog are also she'ima kelev mutarim, the 9 sheep that are together with the dog are mutar, because the ones that are together with the dog have not been traded for the dog, but each of the other 10 that's on the other side, so Reuven takes the 9 sheep and the 1 dog, so his sheep remain mutar for carbon, but Shimon, who took 10 sheep, each of those sheep is considered mechir kelev, and therefore it's possible. So the question is, where? Because they may write. The question is, im amrit yesh brera, if you, Rav Onan and Rav Elazar, are telling us that sometimes yesh brera, then what's the problem over here? We should consider yesh brera. Livra chad minayol v'ahadi kelev. Let's pick out one of the 10 sheep that Shimon got. Consider that one is the one that was meant to be traded for the dog. V'lishkel, take that out of the mix. That one will be possible for the carbon. V'hanach lishteru, and the rest of them should be mutter for a carbon. Okay, Tosfos says, what it is that if we say yesh brera, then what it would mean is it would depend on since he would have the das, Shimon doesn't want the whole 10 sheep that he gets should be possible for a carbon. Therefore, we can argue that when he designates one particular sheep out of the 10 as a mechir kelev, we can assume that was the one he meant to designate all along for that. In other words, it's a little bit different than the case we were talking about over here, let's say, with inheritance. You can't say as soon as the father dies, right away, you're considered to be the owner of these animals versus those animals. It doesn't totally depend on your death. As opposed to over here, Reuben and Shimon are splitting up the assets of their partnership. Shimon can right away have in mind, as they're doing it, okay, you, Reuben, are taking the dog, fine. I'm having in mind right now that this particular sheep out of the 10 that I'm getting is going to be the mechir kelev. So if we say yesh breira, then that should work. Why are we saying all 10 of them also? Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi answers, e deshovu kulu lahadadi. Actually, if all of the animals were worth the same amount, hachinami, then actually you'd be right. You could pick one sheep, correspond to the dog, and you're okay. Hachab, maya skinen. But what would be the situation that we're talking about over here? Deloi shovu kulu lahadadi. Let's say they're not all worth the same amount. The shovi haikal b'chad umashavu. And now the dog is actually worth the equivalent value of one of the sheep plus a little bit. So Rashi says, let's say, for example, so Rashi actually gives two slightly different explanations over here, but they both kind of come down to the same thing. So let's say you have each of the sheep that Shimon got, let's say, is worth, Rashi spells it out a little more in Tamura. Let's say each of the sheep that Shimon got is worth one dinar. So the total of 10 dinars. Now let's say that each of the sheep that Reuben got is worth 5 ma, so 1 dinar minus 1 ma, so 5/6 of the dinar. And then the dog makes up the rest of the value. So altogether, they each end up with animals that are worth 10, but in the case of Shimon, it's 10 sheep that are each worth one. And in the case of Shimon, it's 9 sheep that are each worth a fraction of a dinar, plus a dog that's worth a couple of dinar. So the point is there, and then Rashi brings from his Rebbe over here that makes the scenario a little bit differently, but it still amounts to the same thing. Let's say each of the sheep that Shimon got is worth four, it is worth, let's say, four and one-tenth zuzim, so it totals 41 for the 10 of them. And each of the of the 9 sheep that Shimon got, each of them is worth 4. The 9 times 4 is 36. And the dog is worth 5. Whatever it is, the point is, v'hai mashahu moshech va'asi b'kolu. That mashahu, that the dog is worth more than any of the sheep, that now extends over all the sheep. Because now we can't say, let's say in Rashi's Rebbe's scenario, where the dog is worth 5, and each of the ones that Shimon got is worth 4.1, so you can't say any one particular sheep is the mechir of the dog, because 4.1 is less than 5. It means that remaining value of the dog is spread out among all the other ones. Therefore, each one of them can be considered mechir. If one of them had been, and that's why that I'm a masim like that, in fact, if one of the sheep on Shimon's side is worth exactly as much as the dog or more, so if it's worth in that scenario 5 or more than 5, good, we designate that one as a mechir kelev, that one's possible, the rest of them are kosher. But if each one of them is worth less than the dog, then all of them are considered mechir. Because now you can't say that any one of them is the mechir of the dog. We can't just say two. Once we're saying already that it's not one, then we have to say it's all of them. Yeah. Okay. So the bottom line is therefore that we have then the different opinions over here, whether as far as these brothers, the partners over here, whether yesh brera or ein brera, and we have that and we have that point also as far as mechir kelev. Okay. Mishnah says, all of the animals that a person has that were born during the last year all go into the pen to be counted for Meiser. Chosmin, except for the following ones, Kilayim, a crossbreed, and we're talking about even if it's a Kilayim that is that's mutter to eat, a sheep and goat Kilayim, for example, it still doesn't get counted. Or Trefa, also an animal that's Trefa. And an animal that was born by C-section, or if it's underage, as we learned yesterday, an animal can be brought to a carbon only once it's 8 days old, so if it's less than that, then you don't count it. Any carbon, right. So the minimum age for any carbon is 8 days. With most carbonus, actually, you're really supposed to wait until at least 30 days, because otherwise not minimum ocher. Meiser, I think, is one of the ones. The Pesach is one of them. The Bechor is another one. We're lachachila, even you can bring it on the 8th day. But whatever it is, the point is, less than the 8th day, it's possible for a korban. It's called mechusas man. So yeah, so that one you don't count at all. And also the hayosim, also hello. Better late than never. So v'ayosim and an orphaned animal. So we have to define that one. V'ezehu yosim. What is the definition of an orphaned animal? Kol shemeisa ima oshe nishchata v'achalkach yoda. Where the mother died naturally or was shechted and then after that gave birth. So in other words, the mother was dead at the time the baby was born. Middle of the Mishnah under Zion. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, afilu nishchata ima v'hashelach kayim. Rabbi Yeshua says no. Even if the mother was shechted, but the skin of the mother is still intact, ein ze yosim, then the baby is not considered a yosim for reasons that we're going to talk about on Amud Beis. Well, in other words, if you take it and then start cutting it up into pieces or whatever, but as long as what we mean is, in other words, that. So you can have, let's say, yeah, you could have, let's say, for example, that you took the mother, you shechted it, you stripped off the skin, you started cutting it up or whatever, and then you opened up the womb and found the baby still in there, let's say. Okay. Yeah. So Yeshua would say that, actually, no, if you open up the womb, that would be C-section. No, let's say, okay, at that point, you pulled it out through the birth canal, let's say. Okay. So if the skin is, I mean, you could also have more simply. You could have you shechted the mother, let's say, and then a wild animal ran off of the skin or something. So then it would be considered a yosim. But if the skin is still there, then not, for reasons that we'll see on the days. Okay. So it must be the Nohani maybe. Where do we know this from, that the ones mentioned in our Mishnah are not counted towards Maisa Behem? So like this, the Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, the deposit goes like this. Shor okesev ha'eitz yivoled, when an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, v'hoyah shivach yavim tachasim, it should be together with its mother for 7 days, v'miyem ha'shmini v'holo yirotzeh, and from the 8th day on, it will be acceptable, l'korban isha l'Hashem, for a fire korban for Hashem. So we're going to douse in the posik phrase by phrase. Shor oy kesef trapakilayim. The word shor oy kesef. Now this isn't talking specifically about Maisa Behemoth. This is more generally about kodshim. Shor oy kesef, an ox or a sheep, means trapakilayim as opposed to a kilayim animal. Because then it wouldn't, because then it's sort of like both a sheep and a goat, and cattle or whatever. Oy eiz, and when it continues, or a goat, trapanidma. That comes to exclude also an animal which is nidna, which, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, means an animal that, even though biologically it belongs to one species, it looks like a member of another species. So, for example, it was born from a sheep mother, and a sheep father maybe even, whatever, but it looks like a goat. So it's a mutation. So in general, this applies to Kodshim. So once we say that it applies to Kodshim, then it includes Maisa Behem. But that's what we're going to get to in a minute. Right. Okay, so Tosfos points out the Mishnah hadn't mentioned nidna. The fact of the matter is that Tosfos says the Mishnah had left out Nidmeh, but okay, the Mishnah had mentioned Kilayim. Nidmeh is in a certain sense like Kilayim. So it's also, biologically it's one species, but it looks like a different species.
Yeah, but it's not by intent.
No, but it doesn't matter. Kilayim doesn't have to be by intent either. If a ram goes and then mounts a female goat without you doing anything, it's not intent. Yeah. Kivolid, the pulse continues when it's born, means properly yosedofen, as opposed to when it's born by C-section, that's not considered born. Vahoya shivach yomim, it says it should have to be for 7 days with its mother, properly mechusazman, that means not an animal that's less than that age. Tachat imo, and when it says it has to be with its mother, or literally under its mother, means properly yosem, as opposed to a yosem, because its mother is dead. Okay. So that tells us that, the carbon can't be less than that age. So far, those things teach us, those are general to all carbons. No carbon can be kilayim, no carbon can be a nidmeh, no carbon can be a yotadofen, etc. Now, Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shel Rabbi Yechon, we have also a gzeira shava. Nema kan tachas ha-shavet, v'nema lahalam tachas imoi. Here, by Maisa Behemoth, the Torah uses the expression that they pass under the stick. By regular korbanos, it's tachas ima. You should be under, meaning with his mother. Ma lahalan trapa chalashenas alalu. Therefore, just like by in general by kodshim with agzera shava, it means that all of these ones, kilayim and nidma and so forth, are excluded. After lahalan afkan trapa chalashenas alalu. The same thing, ma'isa behema. All of these ones that were darshanin from this pasuk are also excluded. So that's what the Mishnah means when it says that you don't even count them towards ma'isa behema. Meaning not only it's not even you count them and okay, if it comes out the 10th, then you have to deal with it. No, you don't even put it in 10 to count to begin with. And umakan trap the trefa. On the flip side, we also learn something the other way around with the gzeira shava. Just like by ma'isa behema, a trefa is not included. By kodshim we don't have a specific pasuk that tells us that trefa is excluded. So we have to learn it from ma'isa behema. By ma'isa behema, a trefa is excluded. Aflahalan, trap the trefa, the same thing by other korbanos, a trefa is excluded. How is a trefa excluded from Maisa Behemah? So Rashi explains, because one type of trefa that you have is where an animal's legs were cut off above a certain point. Well, an animal that has that condition is not going to be able to walk. So therefore it's not Yavar Tachal HaShavet. It's not going to be able to pass under the staff. So therefore, once we exclude that, then we exclude other types of trefas as well.
Because
we're excluding one type of trefa, therefore that tells us more generally that applies to all the trefas, right? Right.
We said the trefas was which part of them?
We said that trefas can be, well, in the case of the hind legs, it's if it's cut off anywhere from the akuba and higher. And we're talking about what the akuba means, whether it means the ankle joint or whether it means the knee joint. Or whatever, okay. Fine. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. So that's how we learn that all the ones listed in our Mishnah are not counted towards Maisa Behemah. We have five listed in the Mishnah, Kilayim, Trefa, Yetidofen, Mechusazman, and Yofen. Four of them we're learning from the Pasuk Shorei Kesev and using the Zeta Shava to apply them to Maisa Behemah. One of them, Trefa, is the other way around. We're learning by Maisa Behemah and applying to other Korbanos. Yeah, that's how Zeta Shava works. Yeah, that's how Zeta Shava works. So you can learn things. It's bidirectional, yeah. It's bidirectional. Doesn't matter. No, it's Zeta Shava. Doesn't matter. The point is that you have the same word on both sides. Okay. Fine. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Hakol Mishnasam Adir Leisaster. So Hakol Isuyamai. So what does that word Hakol in the Mishnah come to include? So Leisuyah, Hajitanga Rabban, it comes to include the following things that we also learn in a Braisa. Now, we have a number of other kinds of animals that are possible for a carbon. But nevertheless, we're saying that those are not excluded from Maisa Behema. You still put them in the pen and count them. And if it turns out that one of them ends up being the tenth, okay, then you wait till it develops the moon. So the Braisa says, Horedeya Vanirva, an animal that was used active, that was active or passive in bestiality, which is possible for a carbon, Bahamukta, or it was designated to be used as a carbon for an Avodah Zarah, Bahanevad, or an animal that was actually worshipped as Avodah Zarah, Bahesnan, which we talked about yesterday, that is given to a Zona as your payment, Bahamachir, we just talked about before the Mishnah, where it's exchanged for a dog, and the Torah tells us that it's possible. The tumtum vandroginus, or tumtum, where genitals are covered up with a membrane or whatever, and you can't tell what gender it is. Vandroginus, or where it has it. No, this is Daraisa. Vandroginus. Kula nichnos and ladir leifas. And now all these are possible for carbonus on the Daraisa method. But all of them are still put into the pen for counting for maisa behemoth. So that's what the Mishnah means. Hakol nichnos and ladir leifas. Even though this group of things is possible for a carbon, nevertheless, they do have to be counted for maisa behemoth. As opposed to the kilayim and the treifa and so forth, where you don't even count them. If you get chosen as a ten, fine. You wait till it develops a mum, and then you shecht it and you eat it, and you have the regular rules that apply to mice or shani to mice or behavior bowel mum. So you could eat them.
Yeah. So consist on the one hand, we making Zereshava from coaching what?
Wait a few lines, and you'll have your answer. You don't think the Gemara had that same question? So let's figure out. First, let's finish the Braisa. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, Oyma Meshum Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rav Shimon ben Yehoi, that is. No, he says, Tumtum van Drogenes ein nechnos on the dear lady pastor. No, I agree with you on most of that list, but the Tumtum van Drogenes do not get counted towards Meister, says Rav Shimon. Okay. So now let's analyze the Braisa. The Tana Didan, we have to ask, according to the Tana of our Mishnah, where he's saying the word Hakol, and including by it implicitly what we say in this Braisa, that this whole list, the Reveya, the Nirba, etc., are counted for Maisa Behema, what's the logic, as you just asked? If he's learning the Gzeira Shabbat Tachas Mikodshim, Hani Nami Loi, then these should also be excluded, just like those are excluded from being brought as Karbonis, the Elo Yalif, and if he doesn't learn the Gzeira Shabbat Hani Minole, then where is he getting the ones that he did mention in the Mishnah? Okay. The answer is, La'olam Gomer, yes, after all, the Tana does use that Gzeira Shabbat, but Vahani Rachmona Ravim. However, he says, this list that we had in the Braisa, the Torah is marva, the Torah itself gives us a ribui to tell us that they should be counted towards Maisa Behem. Again, they can't be brought as an actual korban, so if it comes out that they're the tenth, you can't offer them, but that they are counted, how is that? It is because you have a pasuk like this. You have a pasuk that says, after the list of mum, of animals, it says, ki moshchosam bahem mumbam, because they're Moshchosam aloshen hashchosa, they're not wastage really, but
I
think we had this term the other day, actually.
Yeah? Okay.
Right. What is it? No. Kevin Akara. Okay. Kevin Akara
said, what's Akara?
An Akara is a banned woman. No, but in Tehillim,
you're not
lying. No. But let's figure it out afterwards. Okay, let's figure it out afterwards. Okay, Hashchosa means being depraved, it means wound. Whatever, so kima shchotam b'hem, their ruination or their depravity is in them, mumbam, there's a mum in them, lo yirotso b'hem, they'll not be accepted for you. And the Tonad Veda Bishmol, kol mokam shenema by hashchotah, wherever the Torah uses the word hashchotah, wherever the Torah uses the word depraved or destroyed, eina elad var erva v'avodazara, then it refers to a matter of arayas, or a matter of avodazara, dvar erva, v'dichtiv, because... One second, as you have the example where we see that the Shurish Shochas is used of Erva, before the Mabul, it says everybody had corrupted, that's the word we need, corrupted. Everybody had corrupted, or all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth, which we know means that there was Mishkav Zohar, there was even animals were made, there was bestiality, even animals were cross-mating, etc. Yeah. So that's a raya. And avodah zarah, yichtiv pen tashchitun v'asi samachan peshet shmonat kol tamo. We know that hashchata can also refer to avodah zarah, as the pasuk says, because you might that you shouldn't become, lest you become corrupt, and you'll make yourself a statue, an image of any kind of an image of any kind of form, and worship it, etc. So we see that hashchata refers to erva and avodah zarah. Now, so therefore, so all of these ones that we listed in the Mishnah are all under that category. Rezeya and Nirba is part of Arayas. Mukta and Nevad are part of Avodah Zarah. Esnan and Mechir are Esnan is also a matter of Arayas. Mechir we're going to talk about in a second, where we learn it. So therefore, so now like this. V'chol shaham mum poisabai. So now, the rule is like this. Any time when a mum passes an animal, then also, if there's a matter of erva or a matter of avodah zarah, it'll also be possible for that purpose. So since mumim pasul korbanos, therefore erva and avodah zarah also pasul them. So therefore, because that's the thing, because after mentioning the mumim, the Torah mentions ki mashchasim b'hem mumbam. So wherever mum applies, mashchasim applies. Now,
one second.
Since Arayas and Avodah Zarah are Hashchasa, then therefore, wherever a mum applies, namely to the actual Korbanos, then yes. But behind Meiser, now when it comes to Meiser Behemah, it's a little bit different. Hoyovalei Posel Behemah, that an animal has a mum does not block it from being counted as one of the 10 animals towards Meiser Behemah. It blocks it from being brought as a Korban, fine, but it doesn't block it from being... So 1 second. And we know that, because the Pasuk says, lo yivaka ben tov l'ra, you're not allowed to choose or select between good and bad. Good meaning that it's kosher to be brought as a korban. Bad meaning that it's not. Lo yimirenu, and you're not allowed to exchange it. Therefore, also, dvar erva v'avodah zarah nami le'posabe. Therefore, erva and avodah zarah are not going to pass it either. So now that explains the difference between the list of our Mishnah and the list in the Braisa. The list in the Mishnah is not a matter of mum It's a matter of that you have a specific pasuk, Shorei Ketzin, that tells you that these things are possible, and then you have a Zera Shava Tachas that tells us that it applies to Maisa Behemah. But mumim don't pass on animals from being counted towards Maisa Behemah, and neither do the other things that are like mumim, namely Erva and Avodah Zarah. So therefore, that's why the list in the Braisa, Reveya and Nirva, etc., will not prevent an animal from being counted towards Maisa Behemah.
And mumim are not preventing the animal from being counted because of
that. Because of the list, yeah. Which means that you can't pick between them. In fact, we learned at the beginning of the Torah.
By Maisa Behemah.
Okay. Fine. So now let's go through this list.
So they cannot, they have to go to the tent, but they cannot be counted.
No, they are counted. Yeah. They are counted. And if it comes out the 10th, then it would be the same. There's not offered. Right. Okay. So now let's go through this list. Rezeya and Nirba are examples of Dvar Erva. So therefore, they prevent it from being brought as a korban, but not from being counted. Muktzav and Nevad are of a Dzara. But Esnan is also Dvar Erva, because it involves a Zayna. And Mechir Itkash L'Esnan, Mechir in and of itself is neither of Erva nor of a Dzara, Mechir Kelev, but you have a Hekesh between it and Esnan, because they're both mentioned in the same part. Mechir Kelev is when you exchange an animal or whatever for a dog. We had it in the Gemara just before the Mishnah over here. We'll also learn more about it in Shmura, which I mean. Okay. So Mechir is neither Erva nor of a Dzara, but there is a Hekesh between Esnan and Mechir. So whatever applies to Esnan applies to Mechir. Tumtum androgynous, and why does the Tanakhama of the Braita say that the Tumtum and androgynous are counted? Because he says, Kasavah Sveikah, well, because he holds the Tumtum and androgynous are Sophic, whether they're male or female. So therefore, you have to count them. Because, actually, regardless, whether it was a male or whether it's a female, you still have to count them.
Where does the process say male?
It doesn't, actually, that's the thing. You count both the males and the females from Isa Behemah. Good, so then therefore, so Tumtum and androgynous, if you consider it a male, then it's a male. If you consider it a female, it's a female. Either way, you're counting it. So why does Reb Shimon ben Yehuda disagree? Reb Shimon ben Yehuda Omechola, Kasaba, Sveikahu, because he says like this. He says you don't count them, right? Because he holds that, yes, it's a suffix, or actually, Hagoyt Habak changes it to Lav Sveikahu, that it's not a suffix, and in fact, on the side over here, it brings that Rashi has a Gusa Beryahu that he considers a Tumtum and androgynous are not considered a suffix. They're considered, as we had it earlier in the Masechta, they're considered like a separate entity. They're considered a separate gender of their own. Yeah. And we had it on Dachman Day. We had it on Dachman Day, the end of the sixth Perek, end of the sixth Perek, rather. Yeah.
Okay.
So Miet Rachmona Gavik Todshim Zocher Vader and a cave of Adoris by Chumtumandraganus. So he says like this. The Torah tells us a miut when it comes to kodshim, you can only bring as an animal for a korban only an animal that is definitely male or definitely female. The Lord chumta madreganus. Therefore, he says, "My tsunami gomer tachas tachas mikodshim." Again, we have the zedah shava tachas tachas from kodshim. So he says, therefore, the Torah is telling you that chumta madreganus are excluded from that as well, as opposed to the Tanakhama says that. Still, after all, okay, it's only a sophic, whether it's a zocher or an akeva, and therefore the Torah is not meaning to exclude it. Okay. Fine. So one says that you do count them, the other says you don't. Okay. Halacha is like a chacham and seder.
Okay. So you do
count them. Okay, turn it on. I call the chnos and the dearly. After we learn in a brayse that all the animals are brought into the pen. And by the way, Tosfos points out that yes, in that sugya over there on Daphne and Days, we had the opinions of Rav Chista, we had the opinions of Rav Shlokish, that a tumtum is different than an androgynous, that a tumtum is really that a tumtum is really a suffix, but an androgynous is a berry of chasma. So all Gemara is not following that. They're not following that model. All animals go into the pen to be counted for meister. Rabbi Akiva says, you, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehuda, Ish Kva Bar Tosa, are telling us in the name of Rabbi Yeshua that there's only two that are accepted, Kilayim and Shrefa. Rabbi Akiva says, Amisha Maiti Hemenu, I heard from Rabbi Yeshua that there are more of them. Af Yotze Jofer Makot Az Man Liyosim. Which is the same list as we had in our mission. Yeah. The question is, why does Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehuda have a shorter list? The Tanakhama, I gomer tachas tachas mikodshim hani nami loy. Why does he say that Yosef Dofen and Machot Zman and Yosem are counted?
Because he accepted it.
If he accepted Zerushava, then all five of them should be excluded, like we said right after the Mishnah. The Eloi Gomer, and if he doesn't learn them, the Shlemeth Trefer, I can understand why he says the Trefer is excluded, because Kol Asher Yavar Tachas HaShava, the Pasuk says it has to be able to walk under the stick, Tach the Trefer She'enei Vedas, again, as opposed to a Trefer, which can't necessarily walk. El Kilayim Minola. Where would he get that? Where would he get the Kilayim excluded? The answer is La'olam Gomar. Okay. Rabbi Lozab Rabbi Yehuda is learning the same Zeta Shava of Tach. So why does he say that Yotze Dofen and Mechus Zman and Yosen are counted? Because with each one of those, he has a separate reason to say that to discard them. When it comes to an animal born by C-section, then he holds like Reb Shimon, the Omar, which he says, we had this earlier in the sector, Yotze Dofen Vlad Malyahu, that Reb Shimon says that when a baby is born by C-section, it is considered as if it was a regular birth, meaning, for example, Reb Shimon says if a woman gives birth by C-section, she still has the regular Tumah, Yemei Tumah, and Yemei Tahara after a birth, so he considers it a regular birth. So Reb Elazar Reb Yehuda holds like that. Yeah, we had it earlier in the sector. And by the way, Udaloy to Rabbi Yechanan. By the way, then that would mean that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Rabbi Shimon is not like Rabbi Yechanan's understanding of Rabbi Shimon, where Rabbi Yechanan says, Rabbi Shimon will say, there's a difference between the animal being brought as a korban versus a human mother having Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara. Rabbi Yechanan says, Rabbi Shimon's din will apply only to Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara, but Rabbi Yechanan says, Rabbi Shimon would still say the animal is possible for a korban. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that understanding of Rabbi Shimon. He would say that Rabbi Shimon means not only does a human mother who gave birth by C-section have Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara and bring a korban, but even an animal born by C-section can be brought as a korban. So Rabbi Shimon himself, Rabbi Yechanan, the Amora, wouldn't agree with that. Fine, but Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yehuda, Ish Klavar Tosa, that's his understanding of Rabbi Shimon. So therefore, according to him, there's no reason you shouldn't put the Yotze Dofen in the pen because you could even bring it as a korban. B'mechusas man, Stavolak Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Next, when it comes to the animal of mechusas man, which we said in the Mishnah you don't count, and he's disagreeing. Why is that? Because he holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, which we said on Amud Aleph that Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda holds that the mechusas man you do count. because he disagrees with the concept. He says the same way, and this is the same way, for example, as a bechor becomes kodesh as soon as it's born, but you still have to wait a few days before you can bring it to the korban. Same thing, ma'aser behema. Okay, you count it as soon as it's born. We learned about this yesterday. You count it as soon as it's born, and then when it's 8 days old, you can bring it to the korban. And why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda say that you count a yochlin? Kivan shashelach chayim. The case would be where the skin of the mother is still intact. Rabbi Yeshua l'taymei. Therefore, he says Rabbi Yeshua is going according to his own shita in our Mishnah, the Amah, where Rabbi Yeshua said after the shochat of imay v'ashelach chayim that even if you shechted the mother and the skin is still intact, ain ze yosim, and the baby is not considered a yosim. So therefore, according to him, yes, if you had a yosim, if you have the kind that Rabbi Yehuda, that even Rabbi Yeshua would call a yosim, namely where the skin is gone also, then sure you wouldn't count it. But Rabbi Yeshua has a more restricted definition of yosem than Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, it's a yosem if the mother died any time before the birth, or even during the birth, actually. Yeah, well, naturally or shechted, as the case may be. According to Rabbi Yeshua, if the skin of the mother is still available, then the baby is not a yosem. Well, good, then according to him, you would count the baby. So it's Ma'aser Behema.
What was the reason you gave?
We didn't give a reason yet. Now we're going to give a reason. Hayed Rabbi Shmuel ben Sasriel me Arka Slovena lifnei Rebbe. Rabbi Shmuel ben Sasriel from Arka Slovena is the name of a place. Some people say it's a place in modern Lebanon, in northern Lebanon. Anyway, he gave Eidos lifnei Rebbe, in front of Rebbe. B'mekeimenu, he says, in our place where I come from, mafshitin esanesa, when you have an animal that just, when you have a mother animal that just gave birth and then died or was shechted, they strip off the skin from the dead animal, from the mother, or malbishin esachai, and they wrap that skin around the baby to warm it up. In other words, usually when the mother is alive after the birth, she warms up the baby with her body. She nuzzles it next to him and warms him up. If the mother is dead, then instead, Rabbi Shmuel ben Sasriel says, in our area, what they do is they strip off the skin from the mother and wrap the baby in it to warm it up.
And that's why you...
That's why. Amar Rebbe nisgala taimash al Mishnah Seinu. Rebbe says, oh, now we understand the reason for Rabbi Yeshua's opinion in our Mishnah. Why is the baby not a yosin if the skin of the mother is still available? Because the skin of the mother is serving the same function then as the mother. Okay, but still, at least the baby is being able to be warmed by its skin. Yeah, okay. Rabbi Shmuel ben Sasriel also has some other statements that he makes to Rebbe. He says, Chazirin shemem kaimenu. The Chazirin, it sounds like it means pigs, but actually Shittim HaKobetis changes it to Chazeres, and Rashi also explains that it means Chazeres, it means lettuce. The heads of lettuce in our area, Yeshlehem Shishim Riboy Klasim, the base hemsis, Shalai. They have 600,000 layers in its base hemsis. So Rashi explains like this. A kosher animal has four stomachs, as we learned in Kolim. One of them is called the hemsis, and the hemsis has a lot of layers to it because it extracts water from the food or whatever. One time, 600,000. So one time. A head of lettuce doesn't have a hemsis per se, because it's not a living animal, it doesn't have a stomach, but you know how when you peel a head of lettuce, you have the leaves get smaller and smaller towards the middle, so the middle, that area over there where you have the core of it is called the hemsis. So he's saying the heads of lettuce that come for that grow where I come from have 600,000 layers or 600,000 leaves in that center. Hold on. Hold that thought, as I said yesterday. This is a bit of a mysterious agadah. In fact, by the way, the Maharal points out the name of the Chacham, Rabbi Shmuel ben Sasriel. He's telling us Sisrei Kael. He's telling us secrets of Elikos. Okay. Then he said, on the side of it here, it brings a girsa from Son Kodshim, which some of them, Mephoshim, also have, is that he also mentions that Yatush Shibim Kemenu, that also the mosquitoes where we come from have 600,000 layers in their hemsis as well. Okay. He says also, Pamachas Nofel Erez Echad Shibim Kemenu, one time a cedar tree in our area fell down, but Ovdu Sheish Esri Kronis Al Chudai. 16 wagons were able to travel side by side across the ridge of it. Across the ridge of the tree. So you have a log lying down over there on the ground, and you have those 16 wagons that are able to travel side by side along the ridge of it.
16 wagons.
Hold on. Pam achas nofla beitas bar yuchni. He says, here's another thing. One time an egg of a bar yuchni fell. A bar yuchni is a large bird that has a very large egg. And this egg, when it fell, it splashed, and the splash was so big, the tava shishim krakim, it drowned 60 cities, the shavra shlosh me'esarozim, and it broke 300 cedar trees. So the question is, the Gemara asks, mishadule, since when does the Bar Yochni drop an egg of it in the first place? V'haksiv knaf renonim ne'elosa, you have a pasuk in Eov, where Hashem is telling Eov, look how wonderfully I made the world. You can't even begin to understand how the whole world works. You can't begin to understand how I, the Eivishter, run the world. And Hashem says that here's an example, that I created the Bar Yochni with powerful wings that it's able to lift up, knaf means the wing, renonim of the bird of mishubachos, Rashi says that very 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 strong, very powerful wings like renonim, like people would sing about the greatness of it. Ne'elosa, Rashi brings from a Gemara in Menachos that ne'elosa is short for noisei. It carries, it rises up, and it sets it down gently. In other words, that Hashem is saying, this bird, I don't know, some kind of very large bird. It could be an ostrich, it could be even, maybe it could be an ostrich, it could be an albatross, it could be even some kind of extinct bird, for example. You have in various places in the world, there were these giant prehistoric birds, moas and others. Anyway. So whatever it is, so the pasuk is telling us that it's able to lift up its egg, even though it's heavy, in its wings and carry it up to the nest and set it down gently over there. So therefore, so how is it dropping the egg in the first place? Yeah, in other words, when it splashed, it broke, and then the contents of it splashed and ripped. No, the pasuk is, in other words, that the contents of the egg itself, the white and the yolk, came out.
300
Okay, so 1 second. So the question is, how is Rabbi Shmuel telling us that this bird dropped this egg? We know these birds don't drop their eggs. Hashem gave them the ability to carry the egg and put it down gently in the nest. Rav Ashi says, yeah, but that egg was a spoiled egg. So therefore, it wasn't going to be producing a chick anyway. So therefore, the bird threw it away because it doesn't need it. Now, what is going on over here? So Marsha starts by saying, look, if the Gemara is telling us, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that he's giving aegis that he saw these things, then it must be they're true in some physical sense. However, he says the Gemara is not just telling us as a bunch of nice stories. There has to be a deeper lesson in it. So he says like this: the part with the lettuce about the 600,000 layers in the inside of it. This is Marshall saying. He says like this. We know that lettuce represents the slavery of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. We know that lettuce is the preferred vegetable for Mara because it starts out sweet and eventually it becomes bitter. And the same thing, the experience of the Yidden in Mitzrayim was first they got them in with sweet promises and all, and later on they embittered their lives. So therefore, what we're saying is that the Jewish people had a very hard time. The Jewish people, who number 600,000 when they came out of Mitzrayim, had a very hard time. They were in the place of Tuma, like the hemsis, like the stomach of an animal, which is a filthy place. They were in the filthiest place in the world, Mitzrayim Erev HaAretz. And then they were brought out of that, and then there were the 600,000 Jews were brought out of that and they came out to the desert and were given the Torah. So that's the metaphor about the lettuce having 600,000 leaves or shells or whatever or layers in its inner parts.
So
it's an allusion to the Jewish people, the situation of how they were in Mitzrayim, and then afterwards how Hashem brought us out of there. The part about the cedar tree falling, he says, is that the cedar tree represents Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara tells us in Nedarim that Hashem gave Moshe the Torah to give to us. Really, Moshe only had to give us the actual Torah itself. The concept of pilpul, the concept that you can delve into Torah and come up with new ideas or whatever, that was a gift given to Moshe Rabbeinu alone. He had tovas ayin, he was generous, and so he transmitted that to us, the Jewish people, as well. So what we're saying is, he's like a cedar tree that fell down, and now 16 wagons representing 16 generations to come, many generations to come, are able to enjoy the ability to learn pilpul and Torah, going along the surface, going along the width of that one cedar tree, Moshe Rabbeinu. Then the basis by Yuchni, he says, refers to the breaking of the luchas. When the luchas rishonis were broken after the egel, so it means that when it says that 60 cities and 300 cedar trees and whatever, it means that the after effects of the egel persist for thousands of years to come. Yeah. So you have cities meaning regular people, and even cedar trees meaning great Tamil Chachamim and Tzaddikim are all affected by it. So then Rav Ashi informs us that this egg to begin with was spoiled, meaning that the luchas rishonis are different than the luchas shniyas in that it didn't say toiv in them. It didn't say good. The word toiv says aman yitav loch only in the second luchas. So the first luchas in a certain sense were like a spoiled egg, which isn't going to produce offspring. It's in the second luchas, in the second, you have the Aseret HaDibros are in Parshas Yisrael, and again in Parshas Vos Chanan. In Parshas Vos Chanan, in the first luchas, not only doesn't say the word Toiv, it doesn't even have the letter Tes. The letter Tes doesn't appear in the Dibros in Parshas Yisrael. But in Parshas Vos Chanan, it does. It says, Laman Yitkav Loch. Yeah, because in other words, the luchas were rewritten for the second luchas, and it was written slightly differently. Yeah, Zohar Rishomer. The second time, it says Laman Yitav Loch. It has a test in here.
So that's the second Luchas?
That's the second Luchas. So the second Luchas are Toiv in a certain sense. The second Luchas have an advantage over the first Luchas. Yeah, that's the advantage, that it has Toiv, which the first Luchas did not have. Which, by the way, you have also in Hayomiyah, for Shivas and the Tammuz, it mentions that in general, we know the first Luchas had many advantages over the second Luchas, that they were carved out by Hashem himself, and that if the Jewish people had received those, then nobody would ever die, etc., etc. On the other hand, the second Luchas have the advantage that with them we got the whole Torah Shabbat Peh. If we had only the first Luchas, we would only have Torah Shabbat Peh. And also that Moshe's faith lit up. Apparently, that's the idea. Because Hashem would have given us the Torah in such a way that we could understand it without a Torah Shabbat Peh. But the second Luchas we have, there's a Medrash actually that says this. The Medrash says that Hashem says to Moshe, I know you feel bad that the first Luchas were broken, but you should know, with the second Luchas, I'm going to also give you Mishnah, and Talmud, and Agada, and Halachos, and so forth. Whatever it is, the point is that the second Luchas had a certain advantage over the first Luchas in that sense. So that fits with what Marashah is saying over here. The first Luchas were like a spoiled egg that's not going to produce anything. The second Luchas were like a fertile egg. So therefore, that's the point. That's why the bird dropped it. And in the Nimshol, that's why Moshe, that's why the first Luchas ended up getting broken. So the ones in Yisra and the ones in Rosh Hashanah represent the two different ways that it was written on the respective Luchas, right? Okay, there's many, many other explanations of what's going on over here with the Sagadta. The Maharal says that in general, when the Chachamim talk about the large size of something, he says they're not talking about a large thing that you actually find in all worlds, but theoretically, based on the Ruchniistic source of the thing, how big could it maximally be? So, for example, here in our world, you're never going to find a head of lettuce that has 600,000 layers in it. But conceivably, because in the Ruchni is a source of lettuce, such a thing is possible, therefore, conceivably, you could have, so that's the maximum that it could ever be. And the same thing with the other ones. He explains also the three things, the chazeres, the tree, and the egg, he says, represent chesed, dvora, and tiferes. So, as he says, we're talking about secrets from all the course. Mysteriously. Yeah, the Rabbi Shmuel ben Sasriel, yeah. I saw also an interesting explanation. I saw this explanation brought in the name of the Chassam Sofer, but I haven't been able to find it in Chassam Sofer. But he says like this. Going back to, again, the first thing Rabbi Shmuel mentions is this, that they strip off the skin from the dead animal and wrap the live one in it. He says that represents the idea that Hashem arranged it in the world that the koyach that's given to Rishoyim is eventually taken away from them and given to the tzaddikim, and you have the nitzutis of kedusha and the koyach in them. But on the other hand, chazirin, and according to this explanation, chazirin means pig. So why is it that the goyim, in particular Malchus Edom, which is compared to a pig, why is it that they have this great amount of this huge amount of comfort and everything in this world? They have a certain power and comfort and everything they have. Their stomach alone has 600,000 layers in it. Like, look how much they're able to stuff themselves with the good of Olam Hazeh. And why is it, on the other hand, that we have that the, as a result of the Chetah Egel, which is the tree falling, we have like only a small amount of good. We have like, okay, we have the 16 wagons, like you have 16 days from Lag BaOmer until Shavuos, but other than that. So the answer is, in the answer that the egg was dropped, and destroyed many cities, represents that when Hashem punishes the nations, he punishes them all at once and they disappear from history. As opposed to us Jewish people, yes, we go through a lot of hard times, but we still continue to exist with all of them. Hashem doles out the punishment piecemeal, as opposed to the goyim, where Hashem just, when it comes time for the egg to drop, it drops and splashes and destroys the whole thing. Yeah.
Who said that?
So I saw it brought from the Chassam Sofer. It's supposed to be in Chassam Sofer Ala Torah. But I looked in Chassam Sofer Ala Torah in the place that he referenced, and I didn't see it. So I don't know, maybe it's someplace else in Chassam Sofer, or maybe it's from somebody else and was misattributed. I don't know.
It's true that Hashem keeps punishing us.
So that's the answer, is yeah.
And we're still here.
As opposed to the goyim, right. Hashem waits until they've filled up their measure, and then that's it. They're gone.
Like the Egyptians.
Like any other.
Rome
still exists, but it's not. It doesn't have anything near it. First of all, to that extent, Rome hasn't been filled yet. We still live in Golus Edom. We still live in Golus Edom. Golus Edom doesn't just mean that we live under the Roman Empire. Golus Edom means we still live under the culture and the civilization and all. You think of it, Western civilization and Christianity. So what about it? So actually, it's interesting. You actually have, first of all, they don't exist in anywhere near the form they did before. The whole Greek philosophy and everything has long since gone. But the Greek as an ethnicity, they're there. But yeah, they're the next thing up from a third world country, pretty much, you know. But besides that, also, there is actually an interesting idea that some of the Rishonim say that the third kingdom is actually a combination of Greece and Rome, because culturally there was a lot in common between them. There's a reason why they talk about Greco-Roman civilization. They say the fourth kingdom is the Arabs, the Muslims, which you have. The Muslims still have power.
What are the four kingdoms?
So you have the usual understanding is that the first one is Babel, the second one is Paras and Madai, the third one is the Greeks, and the fourth one is the Romans. But you have a number of Rishonim, the Sadi Goin is one of them, the Eben Ezra, I think, is another one, who say that the first two are the same. The third one is a combination of Babel and Paras and Madai. The third one is the Greeks and Romans together, and the fourth one is the Arabs.
Yeah.
That's the fourth kingdom.
All of them will
disappear when Mashiach comes. Yeah, but the point is that up until then, you have one major one, and then you have the other one that still exists as like satellites of it. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we'll stop over here, and we'll start with the Mishnah tomorrow. Yeah.